Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the ninth episode of the Feuerstein's Fire Soccer Podcast Show. I am your host, Daniel Feuerstein, and I will be discussing the game from an American perspective with our clubs, leagues, national teams, and other fabulous moments. You can get your daily reading from me and other writers at MajorLeagueSoccerTalk.com, a member of the EPL Talk family of websites. Don't forget the EPL Talk and MLS Talk podcasts hosted by Richard Farley. Ladies and gentlemen, we all know it's World Cup time, and at the moment, in the office, in the studio, in front of me is ESPN News, as they will be announcing Bob Bradley's 30-man provisional roster for this summer's World Cup. And once they show the players that will be on this World Cup side for the United States, I will be letting you know. But before that, a very good man, unfortunately, is in a bit of trouble. His name is Joe Vide, and some of us here in New York, as well as San Jose and D.C., know about Joe Vide, a very, very classy gentleman, very, very wonderful person, loves to be with the supporters, and unfortunately, he's battling Hodgkin's disease, a very, very terrible thing to do for him, unfortunately. If you'd like to make some donations, the website is right now in front of me. It's www.thefriendsofjoevide.org. www.thefriendsofjoevide.org. And hope you know, make a donation. Red Bull New York, I know, is going to do a special auction, and the proceeds will go to Joe and hopefully win this battle with Hodgkin's. To Mr. Vide, you know, speedy recovery to you. Ladies and gentlemen, some good news for me. You know, before today's broadcast, on this day of Tuesday, May 11th, I check the numbers to see how many people are downloading, listening, RSS feeding my show. And on Monday, May 10th, I have to say I'm very happy that I'm over 1,000 listeners. Here's the roster real quick. Brad Guzan, Tim Howard, Marcus Hanneman are the keepers for the USA. We have, it looks like, Oguchi Onyewu will be on the rosters. They're highlighting him right now on ESPN News. But so far, the keepers, Brad Guzan, Tim Howard, Marcus Hanneman, the goalkeepers for the USA. And the defenders, Carlos Bocanegra, Jonathan Bornstein, Steve Cherundolo, Jay Demerit, Clarence Goodson, Chad Marshall, Oguchi Onyewu, as we said, Heath Pierce, and Jonathan Spector, the defenders. And, of course, the midfielders. How can we not forget good old Captain America? Well, he should be Captain America, but that's probably going to be Bocanegra. Landon Donovan, who has grown up a lot, and we all know how well he will be. DeMarcus Beasley, Alejandro Bedoya in Sweden or Braille. Michael Bradley, Richard Clark, Clint Dempsey, Landon Donovan, Maurice Edu, Benny Fileharbor, Stuart Holden, Sasha Kleiston, Robbie Rogers, and Jose Francisco Torres. And of course, now it's time for the forwards, and we'll see if the Edson Buttle campaign have paid off. Highlighting Jozy Altidore right now, ESPN News. And it sounds like he'll be on the roster, and he is. Jozy Altidore, Edson Buttle, Brian Ching, Robbie Finley, Hercules Gomez, and Eddie Johnson. Ladies and gentlemen, no Freddie Adu in this preliminary 30 roster announcement. So there you have it, ladies and gentlemen. The players that will be on this preliminary roster today's World Cup for 2010. And now, ladies and gentlemen, let's get back to the positive news. Today is, of course, Tuesday, May 10th. Yesterday on Monday, May 10th, today's Tuesday, May 11th. Yesterday, on Monday, May 10th, I will numbers of how many times you good people are downloading or listening to my show. I am very happy to say that I am over 1,000. I'm happy that 1,000 of you have downloaded or listened to my show. I have to be honest that I never thought after 8 to 9 shows and a special, I would have reached this milestone so fast. I am very happy about this, and I want to thank all of you that listen to this show. I will continue on to give you guys great guests, and I hope all of you will continue to listen and support this show. Currently, I am over 1,016 people. I might have to double check that number, but I know I'm over 1,000. Ladies and gentlemen, I thank you so much for listening to my show. And once again, I promise to keep on doing these things the right way, and hopefully I'll make another 1,000 very shortly. Thank you very much to all of you that listen to my show. Once again, we have to talk about the machine that is the Los Angeles Galaxy. I have to say that the entire club had another fabulous performance on the road at Quest Field against the Seattle Sounders. So many times we talked about this fantastic season that Edson Buttle has had from the and now it's Landon Donovan's turn to create his own little story. With 3 helpers and scoring his first goal for the Galaxy this season, they destroyed the Sounders with a 4-goal explosion. At the moment, the Galaxy are at the top of the table, and we will see what will happen once the World Cup break comes. And of course, for those of you that are aware, the Seattle Sounders have refunded their supporters due to what they say, a bad performance with no heart and no... DC United and SC Dallas finally got their first wins of the season. On the ESPN2 Game of the Week, it would be a brace by Danny Alsop to give DC their first 3 points of the season and bite the bagel. With so many draws by FC Dallas, you never thought they were going to get a win this season as well. But with a home victory over their in-state rivals, Houston Dynamo, they got their first win of the season, and meeting DC United on Saturday, FC Dallas got their revenge from the U.S. Open Cup qualifying loss. What are we saying about the quality of the matches that Major League Soccer is producing out there? I think the quality has gotten better as this season will progress. There will be times of a sleeper match that won't be so good, but that happens every now and then. Now, the quality has to improve with our on-field officials, as well as building stadiums, to continue this growth for... For some of you that are not familiar about the possibilities of a New York City 2 side, the Wilpon family, who owns the New York Mets of Major League Baseball, have once again stirred up talks with MLS. The idea here is to have a second pro soccer side come to New York City and challenge or be a NYC proper club instead of the Red Bulls. While I have no objections of seeing a second club in the New York City area, the way that some of the people have gone about it has rubbed me the wrong way. And no, I'm not talking about the Wilpons or this Kemsley character. It's been some of the people that have acted like little children or acting like a bunch of whiners. I understand that everyone is entitled to their opinions, but when you have heard all the excuses of when the Metro Stars were playing at Giant Stadium, it was wait till this stadium is built in Harrison, New Jersey. Now this stadium is being spurned by those who are in a club that is New York City proper. Last time I checked, the Cosmos moved from Yankee Stadium to Giant Stadium and still had New York as part of their history while playing in New Jersey. The real fact is this. Took over the club, they removed the colors and shield of Metro and slapped their own brand on the kits. They kept the history of Metro, and that was fine by me. For some, they felt their club was gone for good. They stopped supporting right away, and I can respect that. But what I can't respect are some people who stood up for this club and all of a sudden decide to stop because they wanted to intentionally drive a stake into the supporters and cause problems. I won't call those people out, but I think you know who you are. all of a sudden, if you being in Red Bull's pockets, which were never true to begin with. But with that being said, and seeing other clubs owned by corporations in Europe who have their brand inside the shield, I guess those people who have supported those Euro and Asian stopped a long time ago. Let's change Bayer Leverkusen into Aspirin FC. Maybe Wolfsburg should be called Das Auto FC. Or the club in Eindhoven be called Flat Screen TV FC. Ulsan in Japan should be called Japanese Motorcar FC. Bayer Aspirin Company runs Leverkusen. Volkswagen runs Wolfsburg. Philips Electronic Company owns PSV Eindhoven. And the Hyundai Car Company owns the Ulsan Club in Japan. Let's be a bit realistic, shall we? If Red Bull never got rid of the MetroStars shield and colors and plastered their Red Bull logo in the middle of the shirt, most of you would have been screaming, "Our shirt is just like what they do in Europe." If you can't tell the truth, then don't bother making up an excuse or a lie. My good friend Christian Dyer wrote a wonderful piece in Goal.com about Red Bull wanting to buy an expansion side in New York City and wanted nothing to do with the MetroStars till they were asked to pick them up as AEG wanted to sell them off. So I find it funny that if Red Bull did stick to their guns and attempted to build a stadium inside the borough of Queens, that these so-called NYC proper folks would have joined Metro. Excuses of too long to get there by car and train are really tiresome, downright childish. If you don't want to go, then do us all a favor and say so. This is not a popularity contest here. Either do it or don't. Stop crying about it and stop acting like a little baby. At least I made my choice a long time ago, and I have never left once the changes were made. Ladies and gentlemen, here are the matches for MLS Week 8, the ESPN2 Thursday night match of the week. Thursday, May 13th, Real Salt Lake hosts Houston Dynamo at Rio Tinto Stadium, 9 p.m. Eastern. On Saturday, May 15th, the Telefutura match of the week as the Philadelphia FC Dallas at 4 p.m. Eastern. New England Revolution hosts San Jose Earthquakes at Gillette Stadium, 6 p.m. Eastern, locally on Comcast SportsNet New England and Comcast SportsNet Bay Area. DC United hosts the Colorado Rapids at RFK Stadium, 7:30 p.m. Eastern, locally on Comcast SportsNet Mid-Atlantic and KWGN Channel 2 in Denver. The New York Red Bulls host the Seattle Sounders at Red Bull Arena, 7:30 p.m. Eastern, locally on MSG Network and Kong in Seattle. Columbus Crew hosts Chivas USA at Crew Stadium, 7:30 p.m. Eastern, Ohio News Network, and Fox Sports Net Prime Ticket. The Fox Soccer Channel match of the week, Kansas City Wizards hosts Chicago Fire at Community America Park, 8:30 p.m. Eastern. And finally, the Los Angeles Galaxy hosts Toronto FC at the Home Depot Center, 10:30 p.m. Eastern. Fox Sports Net Prime Ticket in Los Angeles. Net throughout Canada. If you are looking for the latest gear on this summer's World Cup in South Africa, then the Premier Soccer Shop is the place for you. They have tons of USA jerseys, training shirts, jackets, and of course, the top football club jerseys from Europe, South America, and other national teams. Not only do they have balls and boots, but they will customize your USA jerseys of your favorite players with the official USA numbers and letters from US Soccer. If you're from the New York City, Northern Jersey area, head on down to Hoboken and get your gear at the Premier Soccer Shop, 157 First Street. Call the shop at 201-533-8900 or go online at www.premsoccershop.com. They are on Twitter and Facebook as well. Ladies and gentlemen, I have a great show for you today. Soccer agent to the stars, Eddie Rock of Libero will join me. NASL segment returns with Kartik Krishnayer. And during the New York Red Bull Hour, Brian Lewis of the New York Post. But my first guest is a man who is very excited to talk about his club, who's getting promoted into MLS next year. Stephen Lenhart, who founded the Timbers Army that supports the Portland Timbers, will be coming on the show. And yes, ladies and gentlemen, it is very, very exciting to talk to a man who has – he's the founding father, actually, of the Timbers Army, and I can't wait to speak with him. He is waiting my phone call. I'm going to give him a call right now, and I'm telling you, ladies and gentlemen, it's going to be awesome. So here we go.
Hey, Daniel.
Stephen, how are you? Thank you for coming on the show. Stephen, I believe this is a fantastic time to be a Portland Timbers supporter because next year you're going to be moving on in a certain way, promoted into Major League Soccer along with the Vancouver Whitecaps. Please tell us what the entire Timbers supporters and the Timbers Army has been feeling ever since the idea came through.
Well, I think you kind of nailed it. It's almost like a promotion in a way. I mean, we've kind of, as a supporters group, we've gotten our stuff together and we've pretty organized and people know the name, the Timbers Army. It's out there. I know outsites and teams and players know about it. We've gotten a lot of good talent in town just because of the Timbers Army, actually, and a lot of guys that they want to try to bring into next year's season. So people are pretty excited about all that.
Well, you know, telling from your voice, obviously it's a little early because we know it's probably around 11:15 on the West Coast. It's almost, I think you need your lunch, but yeah, but that's, don't worry. We're not going to hang you up. We're not going to hold you up too long. But anyway.
Oh, no, it's all good.
Oh, that's great. So anyway, just talk, how did the Timbers Army get started? When was it, like when Portland got their club back a long time ago, or have they been there for a while?
Well, you know, back in the NASL days, it was 75 when the original team was here, and I believe they were here until about 82. And then there's a point where they were just not around anymore. There was no soccer at all, but some of those guys that played on the team stuck around and started some college teams and some high school programs that are still good. And then they brought back some soccer, which at Portland for about 4 or 5 years, which was probably like 86, 87, 88, something like that. And then for a couple of years, they changed it to Portland Timbers, and then it kind of went away again. And 2001, you know, the Timbers came back in the USL form. But basically the way that the supporters group started was I actually, US World Cup time, I was going around the bars and seeing people that like soccer a lot. So I started to grab a lot of emails from people. This would be for social media or anything like that. And I said, hey, when the Champions League comes on or whatever match, you know, English match or whatever, I'm going to email you and watch the games as a group instead of just solo one by one in different bars around town. So basically when the Timbers came back, I heard about it, got Jim Taylor, the original general manager, contacted me. And I told him I wanted to start the supporters group. I had about 200 or 300 emails. Of soccer people that I knew around town from watching games and collecting emails, and that's how we started the group.
That's absolutely fabulous. What out of just because we all know PGE Park is really a minor league baseball stadium, and obviously the Timbers had to share it with the Portland Beavers, who are the AAA affiliate of the San Diego Padres. Has there ever been? Now I know the Paulson family they own both the Timbers and the Beavers, but just out of curiosity, was there ever any conflicts with any of the Beavers, or everyone is the same?
With the Beaver stuff?
Uh-huh. Yeah, about the Beavers. Was there ever any conflicts between Beavers fans and Timbers fans, or they're both the same? Steven, are you there? Steven? Oh, I think we might have lost him. I think we just lost him, but that's okay. We're going to give him a call back. Just going to get him back on here. That's the first time. That's the first time I've lost a caller. Usually, the callers lose me. And let's hope that issue never happens again. Trying to get Steven back on the phone.
Hey, are you there?
I'm here. We lost you. I guess you're going through. you're going through. Getting back to that question, was there ever any disagreements between Beavers fans and Timbers fans, or are they both the same?
Well, it's hard to say. They're back at the beginning in 2001 to about 2005 or 2006, you know, it was a lot about the baseball team and the soccer team was kind of the sideshow kind of thing. But the attendance, you know, was just increasing, and we were starting to get more people at the Timbers games than we were at the Beavers games, and that changed a lot. And then when Merritt came in, he's totally focused on soccer. I mean, he definitely focused. I think he's got two parts of himself, I think. I think he focuses his baseball stuff on his baseball side, and he focuses the soccer stuff on the soccer side, and he doesn't mix them like they used to him back before you got there. So that's been good. The baseball team struggles with their attendance big time, especially now that they're probably going to be in Arizona next year for a temporary. I mean, they're not getting anybody at their games, which is, I don't really attend those games. I did when I was a kid, but that's just how it is. But as far as the soccer side, it's two different fan bases, but the soccer side is definitely a younger crowd. It's more hip, more, you know, going to the bars beforehand. It's an event. It's a big event when there's a Timbers game now.
Right. Exactly. Now, obviously, you and many other Portland Timbers supporters, including Mr. Paulson, who had to go in front of the Portland City Board about the recommendations of refurbishing PGE Park into a real soccer stadium, and of course getting the Beavers their own stadium. I understand there was one person who was against it, and what was her name, and why?
Oh, Amanda Fritz.
Yes.
One of the city council members. Yeah. She had some issues with it. In the long run, her vote didn't matter because it went through. So, but she was a tough one. And she comes from an English background, so that was kind of interesting. She was trying to tell everybody she was the biggest soccer fan in the room, kind of thing. And it wasn't anything to do with this. It was to do with the money issue or something. So. But she always tried to make it like she was the biggest fan, but it didn't work out in my end for her, I guess.
Well, it's a good thing those positive. The Portland City Board was definitely positive to this, and thank goodness that it's going to happen. Now let's talk about the city of Portland. What can people expect from MLS if their club is going to travel? What are the positives of Portland? Where are the special places to go?
Right. Well, I mean, Portland is attracting a lot of younger people here. It definitely on match day, there's about 5 or 6 different bars that are located right next to the stadium, and that stadium is right downtown, the old stadium that they're going to be refurbishing, and you can take a train at the MAX line that runs from the airport. It can go right to the front door of that stadium, which is nice to have. I mean, because there's no parking down there, so it turns into a big. It's a lot of the pub culture is based around the game time activities, definitely.
That's fabulous, and obviously, I understand Portland has a lot of a lot of bars known for their brewing and everything.
Yeah. I mean, there's quite a. I mean, I think there's about 33 breweries in the city limits, 28 or 33, something like that. And several of them have actually brewed beer with Timbers names, or you know, like the Timber Jim Lager, that kind of thing. So they're really, they know who their compel is. So, and that kind of thing. But it's, you know, on game day, it's definitely like a, it's an event. And it's, I don't know, a lot of people say it's their fan style, trained to the game, where, you know, you hang out in the pubs, you sing 90 minutes, that kind of thing. So, I mean, it's definitely got that feel, and we definitely have a lot of people that attend the matches that are from that heritage and that background. So they bring a lot to offer as far as that goes. So, I mean, like I said, people are really into it up here. It's not just going to a game and going home kind of thing.
Well, definitely next year, I'm definitely going to try to come over to Portland when Red Bull goes over. I've seen it a couple of times on the Fox Soccer Channel when it was the USL Match of the Week or USL Live. Portland seems to be a very, very nice city. Ladies and gentlemen, if you're looking for Stephen is a pretty good photographer. His website is www.sdlenhart.com, sdlenhart.com. He's a fantastic photographer. I've seen his work. Stephen, you just do a fantastic job with scenes at Timber matches, and of course the Timbers Army merchandise. Just absolutely fabulous.
Thank you. Yeah, I actually did some work with the club this year through the design firm that they're working with some of my work's actually on some of the on the tickets this year, on the ticket package for some of the ticket holders, which was pretty cool.
Well, Stephen, thank you very much for joining me on the show. Once again, to everyone listening from Portland, Oregon, congratulations on your promotion into Major League Soccer, your expansion side. Good luck with the final USL season. Stephen, good luck this year. Take care, my friend.
All right, thank you. Have a good one.
Take care.
All right.
And that was Stephen Lenhart, founder of the Timbers Army. Very, very happy for Portland as they're going to be moving up along with Vancouver Whitecaps next year into Major League Soccer. And get ready, ladies and gentlemen, because as we all know, the Seattle-Portland rivalry will now go up a bigger notch. Coming up next, I'm going to give him a phone call. My first repeat guest of the show, Mr. Eddie Rock of Libero Sports, soccer agent to the Stars. I'm going to give him a call. Right about now. And here we go.
Hi, it's Eddie.
Hey, Eddie, it's Daniel Feuerstein. Thanks again for coming back on the show. I'm glad to have my first repeat guest coming on.
All right, well, I'm honored.
Thank you. Thank you. Checks in the mail. as everyone knows, Eddie Rock is the head of Libero Sports. They are agents to professional soccer players. And, of course, Libero, they are officially licensed by the U.S. Soccer Federation to handle these moments. And this time we're going to have Eddie on talking about some of the insides of what goes on and what a soccer agent or, you know, the sports agent does. And if some of you assume that it's the same thing that what a regular sports agent does, like for the NBA, the NFL, the NHL, and Major League Baseball, certain things could be the same and certain things can be different. Eddie, let's start right off the bat. What are the differences between, like, a trade and a transfer?
Yeah, I think the main difference between a trade and a transfer would be a trade between two teams that we're familiar with here in the U.S. is always one player in exchange for another player or a number of players. And as we see usually with baseball, it's usually a player with a high price or a high contract being traded for a number of probably prospects if it's a small market team. In the NBA, a lot of the trades are based on salary cap and opening up room for free agency, where in soccer you have transfers that are done, where the rights for a player will be sold to another team in exchange, I would say 99.9% of the time, for cash. And so teams will look to build by selling a player and recouping money for his rights and then using that to either sign other players from different clubs or to pick up players via free agency. So the job of a general manager or what we would probably call a technical director in soccer is very different than what you'd see here in maybe the NBA or Major League Baseball. So
the
short answer again is transfers usually is a player in exchange for money, where a trade is usually player for player.
Now, with the transfer window, obviously, for those of us that are aware of what goes on, but for those that don't, obviously, there's two windows. There's one window in the summer, window in the winter. Why is it only during those periods of time that a club in England or a player who's playing in England can go to Spain or Germany or Italy or even maybe in Mexico, that these period of times can only be done?
I think what FIFA wanted to do was regulate how business was done. And, you know, before transfers were happening at all times, during the year. And I think to promote business practices, and I think you can argue that it's actually led to probably more inefficiency in the football market. But their idea was we will condense transfers and registrations into two set time periods, which should make things more efficient. Again, I think you can argue that that's had the opposite effect, but it was more for consistency standard that the rules were brought in.
Mm-hmm. Now, I'm sorry, go ahead.
And I was going to say, just for the listeners, in the U.S., the two transfer windows that we have is January 21st until April 15th, which would be the window before the start of our pro seasons. And then our summer transfer window here in the U.S. is between July 15th and August 15th. And I think for references, I think everyone remembers when Beckham made the move from Real Madrid to Major League Soccer. He had to wait until mid-July in order where he was actually cleared to play. And that was the reason behind it, is that's when our transfer window opened and he could be actually registered with the Galaxy and Major League Soccer.
Mm-hmm. Now, why is it that some people probably get confused? Because when you talk about the European transfer window, and obviously, you know, some people believe that, well, then that's the world transfer window. Why did MLS have their own – why does MLS have their own window, and maybe I guess Europe has their own rules? Does the same thing go with Africa or South America and Asia?
Yeah, well FIFA says to each national federation is you need to have an open window after your season completes. There needs to be an open window, which is always going to be the longer of the two, between the completion of your season and the start of the next season. And then you're allowed to have an open window – which is somewhere in the middle part of your season. So the window is going to be open longer in Europe between July 1st to August 31st. And then they're going to have a one-month window.
Uh-oh. I think we might have lost him. Eddie, you there? Eddie, are you there? Eddie, are you there? Eddie? Oh, I got to call him back. it looks like Skype is apologizing to me today. Now I'm losing callers. This is terrible. Oh, my goodness.
Wow.
Sorry about that. We lost. I think Skype is. I think Skype's apologizing to me. Sorry. I'm so sorry, man. Go ahead. Continue about I guess the different transfer windows, obviously.
Yeah. So the of the transfer windows is always going to happen during the off season. So each federation, the national association, so you're always going to have the U.S., which has really a summer calendar, is always going to have their windows are going to be it's going to coincide but also be different than what you'll see in Europe. So again, it's always going to be a little bit different in every country around the world. Europe is fairly standard, and I think that's what most people go on. And in most large business within soccer, you know, happens revolving around the European calendar.
Mm-hmm. And as you were talking about when to MLS and had to register with MLS in the U.S. soccer as well as with the Galaxy. How is it possible when David Beckham is currently on a contract that, yes, it is expiring, maybe 4 or 5 months left of the final year on that contract, and he's able to come to Los Angeles to sign a brand new contract with the Galaxy? Is that legal? I mean, can it be illegal? Can it be challenged?
It's all part of what's called the Bosman ruling, which was a landmark ruling in Europe, which gave free agency to players once they came to the end of their contract. And much like in Major League Baseball, you know, before Curt Flood, you know, players were held, the rights and contracts of players were held by teams. Even if your contract had ended, the reserve clause here in the United States made it that a player could not move to a new team without some sort of compensation.
Mm-hmm.
As a result, the Bosman ruling, which is very similar, gave players free agency within Europe. And part of that arrangement also allowed players at the end of their contract, in a six-month window leading up to the expiration, to sign a pre-contract with another club. So you had Beckham, who was playing in Europe for a team in a country that fell under the Bosman ruling, being able to sign a pre-contract with Major League Soccer.
Okay, that's really interesting. Now, obviously, Thierry Henry, the biggest rumor to go all over New York City and the tri-state area over here, you know, his love of playing in his love for the city of New York. He said he would love to play for New York, and he originally said he would do that once his contract with Barcelona has finished. But obviously, right now, Pepe Guardiola had different plans for him, basically sit on the bench or sit in the press box. What his situation, he asked Barcelona to get out of that last year. So after this World Cup, he might come to New York. What are the ramifications of that type of situation?
Well, to speak generally, and I think you can apply this to Henry's case, is he still has a year left. So there'll be one of three options that he could use to get out of the contract. One would be Major League Soccer would actually pay a transfer fee for Henry. That is highly improbable. The second would be Henry decides to buy out his contract. And there may be a provision in his contract that says for X amount of dollars, player may buy out the remainder based on their length. And the third option, which is probably most likely, is either Barcelona and Thierry Henry agree to mutually terminate the contract, or they agree to leave with a lump sum payment. So it could be a percentage of his salary for the next year. They may have interest in clearing him off of their books so they can use that cash to sign younger and potentially better players. So, you know, I think if it basically comes down to if Barcelona is okay with him leaving, the likelihood of him being able to get out of his contract is quite high.
Yes,
if
really.
If Barcelona are insistent that he stays for another year, then it becomes much more tricky.
Right.
But I think by, you know, where he is on the bench and in the team, it's reasonable to believe that he could be able to move after the World Cup.
Okay. I mean, that's what everyone is hoping for here that supports the New York Red Bulls, that he'll team up with Juan Pablo Angel once the World Cup is finished. And obviously when the MLS summer window starts to open. Now, what is your role with the players that you represent? I mean, what is it that you do? I mean, obviously we've seen agents go in front of the camera defending their clients. Obviously the Terrell Owens situation in the NFL. I forget his name, but I think you know who I'm talking about. Obviously, super agent to the players. you as the agent to the soccer stars, what do you have to do to make sure that things are either run smoothly or you have to stop a fire from getting started?
Yeah, there's probably two main roles that I would say a soccer agent handles, and they're very different than maybe what you see out of agents here in the U.S. because most U.S., it's a very closed market. So if you're an NFL football player, there's only 31 other teams that you could be playing on if you're a member of one. So I think an agent here becomes much more of a individual who acts to help the image, the brand of a top player, where I think in soccer worldwide, agents are more of what you probably call deal makers. So there's two things agents do. One is help put deals together. I think maybe people who are in tune with international soccer may have heard of Pini Zahavi. He is probably the biggest agent in the world, and mm-hmm. he doesn't necessarily represent players on a day-to-day basis where they have an intimate relationship with him, and he manages all of their commercial endorsements. He's more of a deal maker, and he gets big clubs and big players together and helps, a transfer go through or a signing happen. The second role would be that managing a player on a day-to-day basis, helping them with, building their quote-unquote brand websites, their social media imprint, helping them, make sound financial decisions with their money. And I think that's probably what most people consider an agent to do. So within soccer, there's two main roles, one of deal maker and then one of a day-to-day representative. And I would definitely put myself in the second, which is the more of the day-to-day representative. We mm-hmm. When we work with a player, we want to work with them, really from when they sign with us to the end of their career. I think that's what we would find as a successful relationship, where it's not, if we help them move overseas, we're still going to connected and working for them.
No, that's absolutely a fabulous thing to hear. And ladies and gentlemen, if you weren't aware of certain things that happens in the business of soccer or what an agent does for the game, hopefully you've learned a lot from Mr. Eddie Rock. He is a man that is well-known in this profession. And hopefully, Eddie, you'll be able to sign some of these bigger names in Europe and maybe some of these bigger names becoming big in American soccer and MLS.
That's the plan. So I do appreciate being on your show, and it's great to be a return guest.
Oh, it's fabulous to have you on. I'm very glad you came on and we could discuss this. And, you've educated me because there are some of these things that even I wasn't aware of, and I'm glad to have an expert like yourself come on. Real quick, have you seen the announcement for the USA World Cup roster?
I've only just saw the headlines for it, so
okay.
I don't really have no real comments on that one. So,
sure thing. I thought maybe get inside information if you feel it's going to be a strong one, even though it's probably just provisional 30 men at the moment. But I think we'll be fine. I think we got a shot here to get out of the group. Eddie, I know you're very busy. I thank you very much for these 15 minutes. Have a good day, and let's do this again.
Okay. Thanks, Daniel.
No Bye. Problem. Bye-bye. Ladies and gentlemen, that was Mr. Eddie Rock, who runs Libero Agency, Soccer Agent to the Stars, as I like to call it. Very good man. A very, 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 very informative about what role a soccer agent does and some of the rules of the transfer windows. And obviously there is more than just a transfer window. And now, ladies and gentlemen, come to the North American Soccer League segment. My good friend Kartik Krishnayer will be coming on. He is at the moment running things outside the office, so we're going to give him a call right now, and we're going to discuss the North American Soccer League and so far the couple of matches in. Giving him a phone call right now.
Yes.
Kartik, my friend, thank you for coming on the 40 Scenes Fire show again. Ladies and gentlemen, my good friend Kartik Krishnayer, head communications officer of the North American Soccer League. Kartik, How has the start of this Division II USSF League started, and how are the clubs doing?
It's been quite good. I was in Tampa this weekend. We had a sellout crowd at Steinbrenner Field for the return of the Rowdies, the FC Tampa Bay Rowdies, as they're out on. Enthusiastic crowd, connecting the legacy of the old NASL to the new NASL. Rowdy fans of all ages, all stripes, some people wearing their old kits from the 1970s, and some people wearing the new FC Tampa Bay kits. A sea of green and gold. It was really something special. Got to chat with Rodney Marsh for a while before the game. He's a TV commentator for the local TV broadcast on Bright House Sports. And just a great vibe, positive vibe, a sellout crowd in what is one of the best soccer markets in America, the Tampa Bay area.
Yes, it truly is. And, of course, we remember those old vintage footages of New York Cosmos taking on the Tampa Bay Rowdies when they used to play at Tampa Stadium.
Yeah, that was the rivalry. That was the big rivalry in the old NASL.
Yes, it was. And, of course, no love lost back then. A lot of nasty tackles, a lot of good goals, some dynamic saves back in those days. But you know what, Kardik? I am very positive about FC Tampa Bay Rowdies. Hopefully that the Tampa Bay City Council will see that this team definitely needs their own stadium. And I am always pushing for any soccer club, either in Major League Soccer, NASL, USL, even PDL, to get their own stadiums.
We're very positive that Tampa Bay, we feel very good about the possibility of Tampa Bay being in their own soccer-specific facility in a reasonable number of years. They are at Steinbrenner Field right now. The Yankees have been very accommodating. Hank Steinbrenner is a soccer fan himself, so he's helped out as in this transitional period where they're going to be playing at Steinbrenner Field. And it's just an E-plus facility. This is my second visit to Steinbrenner Field. I went there for the launching of the franchise and announcing of the home stadium back in January, and now for this opening game. And it's just an A-plus facility, great press area, great locker room facilities, outstanding luxury boxes and luxury suites. And the configuration for soccer is okay. Obviously, we want it to be better. We want them in a soccer-specific stadium, but that comes with time, and we're all very upbeat about the possibility of that happening in the near future.
Oh, definitely, and definitely. And how has the rivalry, the Floridian Derby between and Tampa Bay, how has that gone on?
Well, we had the first game of that Florida Derby 2 weeks ago in Fort Lauderdale. Between Miami FC and the FC Tampa Bay Rowdies, and it was a 1-1 draw. And it was an outstanding game. A little heated between the fans of the teams. We've seen a lot of trash talking on the message boards, big soccer, and that spilled over to the stands a little bit. Chants back and forth, and real frenzy. They're going to play again on July 4th at Steinbrenner in Tampa, and then they come back to Fort Lauderdale after that. So it's a real exciting thing for our league. As we've seen with Major League Soccer, when you can put teams in derby matchups that are close to one another, whether it's Tampa and Fort Lauderdale in this case, or Philadelphia and the Red Bulls, as we saw a few weeks ago in Major League Soccer, we're going to see Seattle, Portland, Vancouver. We've seen that in USL for a number of years. We'll see that in MLS next year. It really brings a different element to the sport, and hope to see more and more of these derby matchups, whether it's in our league or in MLS going forward.
Well, once again, Kardik, the idea is to grow the game in this country, and it really doesn't matter if it is MLS or NASL or even in the USL. The idea is to grow the game, make it popular, and make it fun. And at the same time, you can go back and forth at each other. It's quite all right. It's no problem. And as you've said, Miami FC and FC Tampa Bay Rowdies, it looks like it just got off to a fabulous start.
Yeah, it was a great game and a high-quality game. Unfortunately, we had a sending off for Christian Gomez in about the 54th minute. He felt that he had been fouled on a previous play by Aaron Wheeler, and he came right back and retaliated from behind. That's straight red most of the time, and he got straight red, was suspended for Miami's game this past weekend against Carolina, and that's something that I know a lot of people did not want to see because, one, you don't want to see that level of intensity and it's spilling over onto the field in a rivalry, and secondly, Christian Gomez, obviously one of the marquee players in our league, and we didn't have him in Miami playing for Miami FC this past weekend. But he and another one of our marquee players, Stevie Ralston, will be playing a key role going forward. We're very hopeful that Steve Ralston can make his debut for AC St. Louis in the next few weeks. He's been serving as an assistant coach. He's been rehabbing from his ACL injury he suffered last year with the Revolution in the playoffs. And hopefully this week, if not this week, sometime very soon, you'll see Stevie Ralston on the pitch for St. Louis.
Yeah, and obviously St. Louis, I'm very happy that they have a club. I had Steve on my show and talked with the head GM or the head communications officer with AC St. Louis. Just very happy for the people over there, and I'm very glad that the people are all set and they're ready to play this year. Some of the other clubs right now, obviously it is the U.S. Soccer Second Division League in the NASL Conference. The Crystal Palace Baltimore, what can you tell us about them, and how are their stadium, what's their stadium situation going to be like?
Well, Crystal Palace got the first result of the season on Saturday night in Vancouver at Swangard. That was a nil-nil draw, and they're still working through the process with the Maryland Sports Commission. They're going through the same exact process DC United went through a few years ago when there was a proposed facility site in PG's County. The site that's been identified for Crystal Palace is right next to Camden Yard Stadium for the Orioles and MB&T Park, which is, of course, where the Baltimore Ravens of the NFL play. So it would be in that same complex, and we're real hopeful that that'll be resolved favorably for our club in the next few months.
You know, I have to say that you can definitely see both Oriole Park at Camden Yards and M&B&T Bank Stadium. I forget. Yeah, it's a tongue twister for me. The Baltimore Ravens NFL Stadium, it's like right when you're going down or up 95, you can see it right there. It's very close to the Inner Harbor. Fantastic location for Crystal Palace Baltimore.
Right. Yeah, it would be a fantastic location, and they're doing. They've now got their first result of the season. They're on a long road trip. Some of our other NASL teams are doing very well. Rochester, I know you had Rob Clark on a few weeks ago. They are now in first place in the USSF D2. They obviously have the best record among NASL teams. They're playing in the USL Conference this season, but remember, they are an NASL team.
And oh, definitely.
Linchpin of our league. Rob Clark and the Rhinos have done a fantastic job. That is a historically huge franchise in North American soccer. That is a team that has never missed the playoffs in whatever corresponding league they've been in, the A-League, the USL1, and now USSF D2. They'll be in the NASL, obviously, next season. But they've got a really strong team under Bob Lilley. They only have three key players, including Scott Dowell, their superstar keeper, who's been with them for years now. He actually replaced Pat Onstad a number of years ago. Remember Pat Onstad, which was the goalkeeper when they won the U.S. Open Cup in 1999.
Yep.
Rochester is got almost an entirely new team under Bob Lilley, but they've gelled real quickly. And after they played very well in Portland at PG Park but fell on a late penalty, 1-0, they've come back and they've been undefeated in their last four games. And they're really a team to watch. They're coming together well. Montreal and Minnesota was an entertaining game this past weekend. Minnesota is a kind of a hard luck team now. They've blown two late leads, each of the last 2 weeks against Austin and Montreal. But Danny Lagos has done an excellent job of getting the team put together very quickly. 3 months and 1 day from the time when Team NFC Minnesota was announced to when Manny Lagos had to have that team take the field. And he's got a very competitive team and a very good team, and a team that's surprised some people already this year. They're going to be strong as the season goes on. So good things all over the place in our league.
It definitely does. It definitely sounds like it. And, of course, I am on the North American Soccer League website, ladies and gentlemen, www.nasl.com. Redesigned by Carter Krishnire. Is that true, or am I just helping you out?
You're helping me out. I had a lot of help with that. We've had some great help from our public relations and media relations staff, as well as our web designers and web maintenance company, MRX, up in Hamilton, Ontario. So they're the ones who designed it, and they're the ones who maintain the site, and we get to keep feeding information through there. And NASL.com is going to continue to grow. What you see now is not what you see in a few months. If you've noticed, we changed the site in March, or in early April, excuse me, for the first weekend of games, but we keep building the content on the site and building the features as time goes on. And we recently instituted rolling news. We recently instituted video highlights of games, and we're going to continue to build with more audio content. To tease something coming up later this week, we'll have Paul Dalglish's thoughts after his games, that season opener for Tampa Bay, where Jeremy Christie scored the tying goal for Tampa. Jeremy Christie has been selected to be in New Zealand's 23-man World Cup roster. That's going to go play in South Africa in the group with Slovakia, and I believe Italy is in that group, in Paraguay. So congratulations to Jeremy Christie. But we've got some audio from Paul Dalglish from after the game, and also some audio from some other parts, St. Louis and also Miami, that will be unveiled on the site later this week. And, again, congratulations to Jeremy Christie. He's joined on that New Zealand team, Andrew Boynt, the New York
Red
Bulls.
Yes,
he is. Two guys
in
U.S. leagues. Two guys play their club football in the U.S., one in NASL, one in MLS, heading to the World Cup for New Zealand.
Exactly, and that's a fabulous time for New Zealand. And I think, I don't know if you were able to watch the playoff against Bahrain. That was absolutely exciting, and I was so happy to see New Zealand get that goal near
the
end of the.
And that speed, man, was unbelievable.
It really was.
Yeah,
we
would talk to Boyens before he left for that game, but I could not have anticipated such an atmosphere.
Oh, that was such a great atmosphere. And obviously that's what we're all hoping for our national team, and at the same time also for hopefully all our clubs to have this type of atmosphere on a club level. Let's quickly talk about expansion. Obviously you're going to lose Vancouver to MLS next year. Montreal will remain with NASL till 2012, but coming back are the Atlanta Silverbacks in 2011. Obviously, a brand new Canadian club called FC Montreal in 2011, and I believe there are rumors that the capital city of Canada, Ottawa, might be coming to the NASL.
Right, we have FC Edmonton, as you mentioned, entering in 2011. They've already hired their coach, their technical staff. Dwight Lougis is their coach. He was the manager at PSV at this time last year, so high-level coach. They're already putting together a team to play in some friendlies. They're going to play some of our teams this year in friendlies, and they'll play competitively in the NASL next season. You mentioned other possibilities for expansion. There are a number of cities we're looking at. Ottawa has been rumored. I've seen that reported. Ottawa, what I can tell you is that there have been serious discussions with them, and that there is they actually may enter in 2012. Nothing has been finalized, but it is possible. I've seen it reported that they will replace Montreal. That is possible, but that is not by any means a done deal.
Okay. But is this the same UG Melnick who runs the Ottawa Senators of the National Hockey League? Is that his group or is it someone else?
We've talked to a number of groups in Ottawa, and a number of people are interested in soccer in that market. And we, in fact, have this dilemma in a lot of markets we're talking to about expanding into, Daniel. There's been so much enthusiasm about the return of the NASL that we have to vet the owners properly because there are a lot of different investment groups. I can tell you there are a couple cities in the United States with a similar situation as Ottawa where we've been approached by two or three different investment groups. And we have to figure out which ones are the best ones and then move forward with those. So it's actually a longer process because we don't – one thing MLS has done well is because they've established their product, and there are a number of things they've done well, but one thing specifically related to expansion, there are only a few people who can meet that $40 million expansion fee. For us, our expansion fee is substantially less, and we have multiple investment groups in each market we're looking at that say, well, we've got the money for your expansion fee, but we don't want to be in a situation like USL was in where they have teams where they pay the one-time fee and they can't hack it for more than a year or two, and they go out of business and they fold, and then we lose that market. And then for competitive purposes, our teams are playing different teams every year. We don't want that. Our teams have been through that in USL, and it wasn't a good situation for anyone. So we're going to be vetting our owners carefully, and we're going to make sure if someone is selected to be an NASL owner that they can maintain a team for at least 3 years. minimum at the beginning. Now, the plan would be for them to be in the league permanently, but we don't want any of these situations, which we've had in USL, where teams pop up for a year or two. So not only do you have to pay an expansion fee, but you have to be able to show you have the capital to sustain a team for three seasons.
And finally, Kardik, I have to get this by you. Have you seen the roster for the USA World Cup side that Bob Bradley? Your thoughts, please. What's your opinion about Bob Bradley's selections?
Well, I think it's a pretty straightforward selection. I commend Coach Bradley for doing an outstanding job selecting this 30-man roster. I don't think it was that difficult. The real difficult part is going to be coming from 30 to 23, and I know that's going to be a tough job for him and his assistants. Now with Jesse Marsh and Louis Kubik on board, I think that he did, just to address the big point of controversy, Bob Bradley did the right thing with Charlie Davies. I am sure he had information about the recovery and the medical condition and the physical ability of Davies to compete that we don't have. So the people who are criticizing him in the last hour, they just trust that he knows more than we do about the situation. I mean, it's unfortunate that we're going to go into a World Cup without Charlie Davies. There's no doubt that that's going to be a tough blow for the U.S. He's a guy that really opened up the game for us in the last 2 years and also at the U23 level before that. But it's reality, and Coach Bradley has to move ahead with the guys that are healthy, the guys that are fit, and pick from there.
Exactly, and you know what? I think people are overestimating or they're basically criticizing Bob Bradley for the wrong reasons, because let me say this right now. We and Charlie's family should be thankful he survived that car crash.
Right, and let me add one more thing about this. It's a 23-man World Cup roster, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And if you take a guy who's not fit, who's not going to play, and then you have a couple of injuries, guess what? You're wiped out. And then those same people saying, well, why did Bob Bradley take Charlie Davies? Why did he take him when he knew he was hurt? So, you know, think about it that way.
Exactly.
Bob Bradley made the right decision. I have no doubt about that.
He knows
what is happening with Davies' recovery that we don't know. And quite frankly, Davies is, I think he was out of our plans when he had that injury. It was horrific, and I agree with you. I'm glad we're thankful he survived, and let's hope he can get himself back into playing shape to show next year and then work his way back into the national team.
Exactly, and there's always another World Cup cycle. There's always another World Cup cycle. It's 2014 in Brazil. He'll be ready for that, barring any other injuries he receives on the field. But people have to understand, Charlie Davies is a guy who is a future player for the national team. You can't rush someone that went through such a horrible car accident. Unfortunately, his friend died, and thank goodness he was in the back seat wearing a seatbelt, even though it was past curfew. But still, you cannot complain about Bob Bradley not picking Charlie Davies. The man needs more time to rehab. He needs more time to get his speed back. And once that happens, pre-car crash, he'll be back. And I think we all know that. Kardik, I'm very happy for you. I'm very happy for the North American Soccer League. I'm very happy that things are going well. I thank you for your time, my friend. Good luck with the rest of the year, and I will speak to you after the show, my friend.
Great. Take care.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. That was Kardik Krishnayer, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you very much, Kardik, for being on the show. And once again, the North American Soccer League, you can tell that they are trying to do the right thing to make sure that this league and thriving at the same time. Ladies and gentlemen, now it's time for the New York Red Bull Hour. And before I discuss the Red Bulls' last match in San Jose, I was thankful to spend a good couple of minutes with Brian Lewis, who covers the Red Bulls for the New York Post. He wasn't able to come on the show due to his busy schedule, but I was grateful to have a good 15 minutes with him. And now, ladies and gentlemen, from the New York Post, Brian Lewis.
And with me on the 48 Teams Fire Soccer Podcast show, I'm very happy to have Brian Lewis, who reports on the Red Bulls for the New York Post. Brian, thank you very much for joining me. I know you have a busy schedule in front of you.
It's my pleasure to be here.
Wonderful. So, Brian, let's quickly take a look at what happened on Saturday night.
Do we have to?
I think we're going to have to. Luke Sassano is the man in the news, and that was – I've seen the replays. I think that was a red cardable offense.
I would agree. I mean, I certainly don't think it was malicious, I don't think anybody could. You could, I guess, make the argument that it might have been a yellow, but I don't think it's possible to make the argument that it was a bad call. You certainly can't argue that that was not, you know, able to be called a red card. So, I mean, he kind of put his team behind the eight ball there, and San Jose did exactly what they're supposed to do in that situation.
Exactly, and they punished him properly with four goals into the back of the net. But besides that terrible of a loss in the brand-new Hans Bacca area, what can we say about our new head coach?
Well, I think he's organized. I think he's disciplined. I think he's got a very good vision of how he wants the team to play. And I think he's done a great job of getting that vision across to his players. Not that he's reinventing the wheel, because he doesn't. There's nothing particularly complex about what he's doing. It's more Vince Lombardi-esque. This is the way we're going to do it. This is how we're going to drill, and you're going to drill until you get it right. And if you follow orders and you do what you're supposed to and you're in the right place, we'll be in every game. Unless, of course, you have a 13-minute red card.
Yeah, let's hope that doesn't happen again, which I don't think it's going to happen again. Yeah, it was a little weird to see Luke Sassano playing for Jeremy Hall to start that match, even though I don't believe Hall has done anything that terrible, unless he missed a marker, which is probably very small, yet he did start that match. I think, have you ever been to Europe at all? Have you ever seen a game in Europe, Brian?
I have. I have seen games only in England. That's the only place I've seen games.
So where would you rank Red Bull Arena to that particular stadium in England?
Well, it was Arsenal. So here's the thing. What I've seen in driving around there, this stadium, Red Bull Arena, is as nice, if not nicer, than just about all the stadiums of its size. It's unique. I mean, there are obviously some massive stadiums. There are some wonderful stadiums, but the stadiums that are, let's call them, for lack of a better term, medium size.
Mm-hmm.
The medium size stadiums don't quite compare with Red Bull Arena in terms of the creature comforts and the quality. Usually, those stadiums are a little bit more threadbare, perhaps.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I don't think that they're blowing smoke when they say that this is one of the nicest medium-sized stadiums anywhere to be found. I don't think that's an exaggeration. I think that's fair.
I would have to agree with you. I've seen a couple. Obviously, you know, we're lucky enough to have ESPN2 showing games from England, Fox Soccer Channel showing games from England and Italy, and, of course, Gold TV in Spain and Germany. I think I can definitely agree with you that this is one of the nicer medium-sized soccer stadiums in the world, and obviously here in the United States until the next ones are built. But other than that, this roster, and I think you've been through the years as well as with Michael Lewis and Frank Giacci and Jack Bell, there's been so much turnover with this roster, but for the first time I think ever, there's barely been a major turnover. There's been a piece added here and there, but it's basically almost the same roster.
It is. I mean, there's been minor tweaking, a few upgrades here and there. It was most of them were done in timely fashion, with time to integrate into the team. But it's not wholesale changes. I mean, basically you're talking about 7 of the 11 men start that end of the season. So it has not been wholesale changes. It's more in terms of being tactically aware and being positionally where you're supposed to be at all times for 90 minutes, or as close as you can get to the 90 minutes.
Mm-hmm. And, of course, there have been plenty of rumors going around, as you've probably seen yourself. What is your opinion on the rumors of Zé Roberto leaving Hamburg and coming to Red Bull, and, of course, the ever-famous Frenchman Thierry Henry?
Well, I mean, I'm not in the inner circle with any Austrian overlords. They don't really ask my opinion, but from what I understand, they're exceedingly confident of adding one designated player. They would like to add another designated player. I believe Eric Soler termed it somewhere have one designated player. And considering Henry's been given permission to leave, and it's well known that this is a city that he favors, and he told me not this June, but last June, that he expected to come play here, I would say at this point I'm going on the assumption that, yes, I don't think these are rumors. I don't think these are fake. I do believe he's coming. Zay Roberto, I'm a little less certain about. I'm not saying that I think it would be a bad move. I think it would be a great fit, especially with the demographics right across the water in the Ironbound. I think he'd be a great fit. I've talked to a number of business leaders in Harrison and in the Ironbound about just what that signing would mean for Red Bull. And I don't mean Henry. I meant Zay Roberto.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a little less confident of that. But I do think there's a reasonable chance, yes. More than I thought so a month and a half ago.
Right. Well, you know, I think obviously having Thierry Henry coming to New York and to this New York-New Jersey area would be a fantastic thing. Obviously probably add a little more butts into the seats. And if Zay Roberto does come over, I think, and of course I think Red Bull did purchase that third designated player spot, you know, this could be a very potent attacking offense, and probably MLS hasn't seen anything like this since maybe the early DC days.
Well, I mean, it certainly has the potential to be that. I mean, you know, obviously I want to see it before me on the field, but it certainly does seem that way. It certainly does have the potential to be that. And, again, these are players that are coming in mid-season, but these are also players with high soccer IQs. They don't need an awful lot of time to adjust. They don't even need to speak the language. It just happens. So I would feel pretty confident in this offense if both of those come in. Again, you know, we'll see if that comes to fruition. But you're right. I mean, this has the makings of an exceptionally potent offense.
Yeah, it really does. Brian, I know you're a baseball guy. I know you also do other things besides soccer, reporting for the New York Post. When did you get into soccer? How did you get into soccer? Have you always been a soccer fan? And finally, a dream was realized that you're able to report it in the New York City tri-state area?
Well, I mean, I didn't grow up playing it. I don't claim to have any sort of skills whatsoever on the pitch. I got into it, I would say it was purely by accident. I went to Rutgers, and a high school, I won't say classmate, a gentleman that I went to high school with was an All-American midfielder at Rutgers. I used to go to the Rutgers games just to support him, mainly. Dave Mueller, I don't know if you remember the name or if you're familiar with the name, but he was on the Rutgers Final Four teams. So I used to go out to the games in support of Mr. Mueller, and I really enjoyed, you know, they actually hosted the Final Four at Rutgers when he played in it. So I said, this is a great atmosphere, this is a great sport, I like this. And another gentleman who I knew at Rutgers was a diehard fan of the Mexican soccer leagues. His family had a dish. They used to watch the Mexican soccer games on the weekend. He would drag me to his house to watch these games. And I'd say my first true experience that made me a convert was Diego Maradona. When I watched him dribble through England's defense, I had no idea who he was. I said, who is this person, and why is it nobody can take his legs out? And right there in that 12 to 15 second span of watching him just shred that defense, I was instantly converted. Became a soccer fan from that day, voraciously reading, watching, studying, and ever since then I've had the bug, really, and I can't get rid of it.
That's just fabulous. Have you ever had the opportunity to go to any of the World Cups when the USA was in South Korea or...
No, well, I did not go to South Korea, and I didn't really expect to. I was initially to be sent to Germany, but because of budgetary constraints, that trip got canceled, and I covered the 94 World Cup. which I have always maintained to people that I know who either dislike soccer or are ambivalent about soccer, if you get a chance to attend one of those games, if you get a chance to see a World Cup game with your own eyes and feel the electricity in the arena and enveloped by the passion that the fans of the various countries have for their nation playing out in front of you, you'll be a convert. Don't care what sport it is you like. Don't care whether it's volleyball, basketball, lacrosse. It doesn't matter. You'll be a convert.
Yep, exactly. That's what I keep saying. You just got to give it a shot. You got to give it a chance. And if you do give it a chance, you'll like it. It's not that bad of a thing if you go to a game live. Now, let me ask you a silly question. Who on the Mets could be considered a double of Maradona?
A double of Maradona? Who's built like Maradona?
Yep. Who looks like him?
Oh, well, Barajas has kind of a similar build. He's a little bigger.
Mm-hmm.
But he does have that same, how should I say, stocky athletic build.
Mm-hmm.
Who's He's a little larger.
Yeah.
If they had a fight, I think I would take Barajas.
Okay. Who has the more facial look like of Maradona?
Oh, I don't know. Now, see, I'm getting this question. I'm getting the feel that this is a trick question. I think you know the answer.
Of course, I know the answer.
Who is it? Who are you gonna give me?
It's the other catcher.
Oh, Blanco. Yes.
So.
Right. He does. He's on bereavement leave, actually. Right?
Oh, yeah. Oh, too bad.
Yes.
That, I guess that's what he gets for getting that walk-off on Saturday afternoon. So the next time you do a Met game and you see Henry Blanco, you tell him from me that how many times have people called him Maradona?
Well, you know, I actually did have a Freudian slip the other day. I was doing a Red Bulls advance from Citi Field. I had interviewed Juan Pablo
yes.
in practice, and I drove from practice straight to Queens,
uh-huh.
and I was writing my Red Bulls advance, and I filed it just before the clubhouse opened. I ran down the stairs, I went into the clubhouse, and I was doing my early about Pagan, and I actually called him Angel. He pronounced it Angel. He pronounced it Angel. And I said Angel, and I just had the Freudian slip.
Oh, no. Yeah. See, this is what happens when you multitask too much. You
good at it. Try to tell my wife that. Don't have me multitask, please. Just let me do the one thing, and I'll get it done right. If you have me multitask, you'll get both things done wrong.
Now, obviously, Red Bull has that Open Cup qualifier coming up on Wednesday against New England, and we saw the reserves take out Philadelphia. Connor Chin up top with Juan Agudelo. Tony Chani basically driving down the midfield and giving good service. We're going to see that same lineup against Philadelphia on Wednesday night?
Similar, yeah. It'll be a very similar lineup. I don't know if it'll be exactly the same, but it will be a similar lineup. I think this is the way he's going to go. He's going to ride this and see exactly how far it can take. I believe that's his preference. I mean, I think he'd prefer to go maybe with closer to a starting 11, but he doesn't feel that his squad is big enough. He doesn't feel that it's big enough to play guys on a Wednesday and then come back on a Saturday. So this is the way it's going to be. Now, whether win, lose, or what have you, this is probably going to be 8 or 9 of the same players that you saw out there.
And finally, what's your feeling in that Red Bull locker room, or as they call it, the rejuvenation room? What's your feeling about this club? Do you think that there's a possibility, even though Baca has said that look for this club to win it all next year, do you feel that maybe that prediction will be early?
It's hard for me to answer that only because it's kind of like asking me, say, how much does a house cost? You know, it's there's a lot of variables. I don't know whether Zé Roberto is going to be here. I don't know. I don't know what Juan Pablo's health is going to be, because I mean, let's fair. He turns 35 years old. I think 3 days after the regular season finale. and he's got a degenerative arthritic condition in his back. I mean, is it possible that maybe three straight road games on artificial turf somewhere knocks his back out of whack again, and he's got the same problem that he did before? It could. I don't know. Is Henry going to be here? I don't know. As they're presently constituted, I think that might be asking a bit much. As they are presently constituted, I still think Columbus has a great team. Clearly, Los Angeles is playing better than anybody else in the league. Probably asking a bit much, but if all of those things go right for them, and you have a healthy Henry and a healthy Juan Pablo and Z. Roberto, then certainly there's no team in this league on paper that I'd say they're incapable of beating. So I wouldn't rule it out. I guess this is my fence-sitting way of saying, why don't you come back and ask me a day after the transfer window closes? Then I'll be able to give you a better answer.
That's fine. Brian, thank you again for your time. I know you're very busy. We have a very, very busy schedule in the New York area. Thank you very much for coming on the show, and have a good day, my friend.
Okay, great to be here, and anytime, just give me a call.
All right, thank you very much.
And that, ladies and gentlemen, Brian Lewis of the New York Times. Once again, Brian, thank you very much for able to do this interview. I know you have a busy schedule. If you are a big supporter of the New York Red Bulls and you want to get the latest gear of your favorite club in the New York City area, hop on the PATH train or drive down to Hoboken and walk over to the Premier Soccer Shop located at 157 First Street. Get your brand new home white red Red Bull New York shirt. Want to get it customized with your favorite players like Juan Pablo Angel, Dane Richards, Mike Petke, and newcomers like Jolyn Pear, rookie Tim Ream? They have the official numbers and letters from Major League Soccer to put on the backs of the jerseys. Call the shop at 201-533-8900 or go online at www.premsoccershop.com. They are on Twitter and Facebook as well. What happened at Buckshaw Stadium in Santa Clara? That was the worst challenge I have ever seen a player give, and it was so clumsy that I couldn't believe that Luke Sassano kept on telling referee Andrew Chapman that he went for the ball. And the ball was already gone after he spiked Bobby Convey in the ankle. And what did the Earthquakes do to our 10-men Red Bulls? They properly punished them with 4 goals. The Earthquakes played a simple game, and for the first time in the Hans Bucke era, the club looked lost after the first goal was scored, just before first half stoppage time. This was the first time that Tim Ream played like a rookie. Buna Kondul had a terrible time in net, and when he tried to save Gertsen's tally, he scooped the ball instead of trying to stop it. He actually olayed the ball and allowed it to go through him. Thankfully, Mike Petke's wrist injury isn't too serious, and he will be available for the league match against the Seattle Sounders. For the club being down 10 men from the 13th minute till the end of the match, they actually played a good first half and tried to keep them. Got to halftime, but that first goal by San Jose in the 43rd minute ended all hopes for a better second half. The good thing about this loss is that the problems are correctable, and things will be much better when they play their next league match on Saturday, May 15th, against the Seattle Sounders, 7:30 p.m. on MSG Network with Steve Cangelosi, Shep Messing, and Tina Servacio. Before they play the Sounders on Saturday, the club will host the New England Revolution Wednesday, 12th, in their second round of the U.S. Open Cup qualifiers. The match will be streamed on the Red Bulls website, or you can come to Red Bull Arena and see the match live. Start time is 8 p.m. Eastern. And ladies and gentlemen, it is time for the audio. We have, of course, head coach Hans Bucke. We got Mike Petke and Tim Ream. Once again, Brian Salver, from the communications department at New York Red Bulls. I want to thank him again for providing me with some audio after the match. Hans Bucke.
Team give him a chance as a right fullback, so that was, of course. I don't know. I haven't seen the replay if it was a red card or not, but anyhow, it's unlucky for him.
You keep your forwards for a long time, playing 10 men, you keep Ibrahim and Juan Pablo up front, and then you bring Hall, like, towards the end of the second half.
Jeremy Hall went in, I think that was after Danley Borman came in, yeah, and I think just to get some more attacking players. I think that when you're one down, we tried to stay with the two strikers and see if they could produce anything, but we had no pace up front, so we tried to play Dane Richard with pace to, in a way, be a threat for the back four in San Jose.
What do you think of the player, young center back tonight? Was
I would say the first time that he suddenly started picking up players instead of playing in a way a zone system. So he, you know what I mean, when they start run the channels, he picked them up instead of just staying in the line. It would have been offside every time probably. So, but it happens. It has to be one game that he has a little bit problem.
Can you talk about Tony's first start?
Yeah, he looked okay, I would say, definitely. And he gave me an answer that he is a player for the future. He looked solid, very good in the passing game, and this was the first start for him. So he's a young player, and he has to learn, but I'm happy with his effort today. Yeah.
Just one that you just kind of put away and turn the tape?
Yeah,
or?
So because this is...
Yep, definitely. Get the tape. And burn it. Burn it completely. Because I'm telling you right now, we don't ever want to see that again. It was that four-goal destruction against Red Bull by the San Jose Earthquakes. Give the Earthquakes credit. Give them credit. They actually played a simple game. They did very well. And, you know, I just feel that, you know, if that didn't happen to Sassano, if Sassano did not make that reckless challenge, it could have been a different game. It could have been probably 0-0, 1-1. You never know. But here's the thing. It would have been interesting if Ryan Johnson did not score that 43rd-minute goal. Things could have been different at halftime. Maybe substitutions could have came in a little earlier. And you never know. Let's go to Tim Ream. Yeah, you know, Tim Ream is going to be a player for the future. Tim Ream is definitely a solid, solid center back that has U.S. national team, you know, potential. And for the first time in his rookie year, he had a bad game. Sooner or later, the bad game monster was going to come up and take him. And it happened. It happens to every rookie. And here's Tim Ream assessing his play.
I mean, you know, 10 minutes in to get a red card, it changes the whole dynamic of a game. And, you know, in the second half, I felt like we were down two, maybe three men. It was unbelievable. You know, we were doing a lot of running. They were knocking the ball around. You know, it's the way it goes sometimes.
Mm-hmm. How would you rate your performance tonight? Obviously very difficult circumstances, for sure.
Yeah, difficult circumstances, but even so, I mean, you still have to, you know, step up to the plate. And personally, you know, I didn't, you know, still haven't played my best game. You know, that's probably the worst game I played all year. Unfortunately, it comes at a bad time.
In what respect? I mean, why would you say that was the worst?
And that's what I like about Tim Ream. He's not going to sugarcoat anything. He is not going to say, well, you know what, I tried my best, and it just, you know, they did this, they did that, but, you know, I thought I was in the game. I thought, no, he admitted he had a bad game. And that's why Tim Ream is going to shine for this club, you know? I wouldn't say he got exploited. I would just say that he just had a feeling that it wasn't going to be his day, and it wasn't. It wasn't anyone's day that after the 13th minute. But don't worry, better. He will improve, and he'll be his center back self. Super center back self. Don't worry about it. And, of course, old reliable Mike Petke will hear what he had to say about the match.
Well, I mean, 3 minutes into the game, going down a man, I mean, it absolutely changes the course of the game, 100%.
I thought that we fought hard. I have to go back and look at a couple of the goals. At least two of the goals seem offside to me. We did fight hard. Some things that we didn't do right. But like I said, when we're down a man on the road, it's tough. And I will say that much rather lose 4-0 than 1-0, to be honest with you, at this point, after our good start, that'll maybe, you know, smack us in the face a little bit. I don't think we're overconfident at all. However, you know, maybe this is something that guys could, you know, use as motivation.
Talk about.
And that was Mike Petke, and he summed it up brilliantly. You know, better to get destroyed than, you know, you're probably down a goal and then you just can't seem to knock in that equalizer for the to steal a point on the road. You know, it's just one of those games. And here's the thing. We can't get worked up over this loss. Because why? Number one, Red Bull is undefeated at Red Bull Arena. We are 3-0, 4-0 if you want to count the Open Cup qualifier. This side is 2-2 on the road. And we've won in Seattle to break that record. We've won in D.C. that we haven't won in 5 years. The only two road losses was a bad game at the Home Depot Center against Chivas USA and this 13th-minute red card to Sassano and the four-goal destruction by San Jose. We're 2-2 on the road, 3-0 at Red Bull Arena. This club is 5-2. These things are correctable. Hans Bacca has been through it all. He's probably been through it all for Copenhagen, FC Copenhagen, when he's in the Danish league. You know, when he's been coaching over in Sweden, and when he was the assistant to Sven-Goran Eriksson over in England at Manchester City. You know, he's probably seen the same things. It's happened before. The club is doing well. It was a bad loss, but it is repairable and correctable. So guys, don't worry. Nothing wrong is going to happen. Everything is going to be just fine. To play in, to sit in, and watch this team basically have a rejuvenation of a season. So don't worry about that. Now let's move on. Tomorrow night, you can see it live on Red Bull's website. They'll be streaming it live. U.S. Open Cup qualifier, second round for the Red Bulls, and they will be hosting the New England Revolution. And for the New England Revolution, they're having a bit of a tough time getting wins. They went to Columbus, and they lost on a second-half stoppage-time goal from Robbie Rogers. Just absolutely dreadful time for New England. They've been model of consistency throughout the years. Maybe this is the year that they're finally going to break down. But we all know Steve Nichol. We all know he's always thinking. He's always trying to find ways to get this club back to the positive ledger, the positive side of the ledger. But here's the thing. Red Bull will be determined, and they will go out and try to advance to the next qualifying match, which they'll host hopefully around the end of May, which will be the 26th, Wednesday night. But before that, let's hopefully they'll go and beat New England and tomorrow night at Red Bull Arena. Here is the starting 11 announced by Brian Lewis of the New York Post that he was at training today. Once again, it will be the reserves. Andy Sutton. Excuse me. Sutton will be in goal. Danley Bormann, left back. Chris Albright, right back. Carlos Mendez and Andrew Boyens, center backs. And for Andrew Boyens, congratulations, sir. You have made the 23-man roster for New Zealand's World Cup 23-man roster. Congratulations, Andrew Boyens. And do your country proud and do New York Red Bulls proud. Hopefully you'll get in a match or two. Midfielders, Brian Nielsen will be on the left. On the well. And, of course, there have been those that are saying that Hans Bakke feels that he is a midfielder, not a defender, but he's only been put there as a defender because of Albright. Jeremy Hall will be on the right side bringing up the ball. And in the middle, the king of the midfield, Tony Chani, Sinisa Ubiparapovic. And the strikers, it is Connor Chin, who scored that brace against the Philadelphia Union back in April in that first round qualifying match. And next to him is not Juan Agudelo, but it will be Woolly Magic. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, John Wolanek will be paired up top with Connor Chin. Magic will be on the field busting his butt to try and score a goal or two. So that is your starting 11 for the New York Red Bulls. Once again, you can follow me through Twitter, D Feuerstein. It's D, capital letter D, capital letter F, lowercases, E-U-E-R-S-T-E-I-N. So please follow me on Twitter tomorrow night. 8 o'clock is match time. And please come over to Red Bull Arena to watch it. And if you can't make it to Red Bull Arena, then it will be streamed live on their website, NewYorkRedBulls.com. And now we come to, I guess, my rant. For those of you, once again, they got a win at D.C., they had a bad loss in San Jose, but still, 5 wins and 2 losses is not a bad start. Galaxy have a much better start. They haven't lost a match yet, but still, this is not a bad start for the Red Bulls. Now, I'm hoping that you guys will come over and fill the place up. Now, hoping for a lower bowl fill up. I'm also hoping for a decent upper bowl fill. But the real challenge, if you guys don't want to come up for a midweek night game, obviously it's going to start around 8 o'clock, it's a little later. But if you guys are not going to come for a midweek night game, then come Saturday night, May 15th, against the Seattle Sounders. Then, and fill Red Bull Arena to the hilt. I understand what you're thinking. I understand what you are assuming that, well, we've seen this before when they were the Metro Stars. We saw this in 2008 when they just came out like gangbusters in the playoffs, and then they had a crap year last year. And I understand that, but you know what the point is this, is that we are no longer at Giant Stadium. We are no longer there. Giant Stadium is slowly going down, demolishing. This is Red Bull Arena. I don't want to hear the excuses. I really don't want to hear the excuses because you want to know what it is? It's just a sham. You've got to come to the stadium that is by far the best American soccer stadium in the United States. That doesn't mean that the rest are complete crap. It just means that we have the best. Because any stadium that is built for the game in this country, it's always a positive. And we need positives. There will always be maybe a stadium that could one-up Red Bull Arena. And that's fine by me. I don't care. I'm just proud that I can walk, I can just go inside this stadium and report on the game and talk to the coach and talk to the players inside an awesome, awesome stadium. And, of course, there's empty lots in there because that's supposed to be the other project. It's supposed to be apartments, supposed to be shops, restaurants, movie theater, Broadway theater of some sort. But you know what? You got to come. The PATH train is right there. You want to take the Jersey Transit? Take the Jersey Transit to Newark Penn Station and then take the PATH stop. I don't know how much more I can say. I don't know how much more I can do. Red Bull Arena is fabulous, and you guys have to come. And if you live in Harrison, New Jersey, You know it's not that far away. You can walk over to the games. You can walk over and get your tickets. Because I've heard these rumors that the township of Harrison, outside of, not from the mayor, obviously, the mayor has always wanted this to happen, but there were people that have been telling the people of Harrison to stay away. Don't stay away. Come. Because this is your stadium too. It's not just for the New Yorkers. The proper thing. I'm really annoyed. Because we've all been wanting this to happen. Then all of a sudden Red Bull comes in. They bought the stadium. They bought the club. They bought this. And then they just took away the colors and the shield. And they just put everything themselves. Let me tell you something right now. If Red Bull was going to get that expansion side, and you know how long it's going to take for them to actually build the stadium from scratch, because they want to be, I understand they want to be in New York City proper, but the thing is, what land is there to get? Seriously, are they going to build it in Flushing Meadow Park? I don't think so. That would have been an uproar in the neighborhood. Yeah, sure, aqueduct. Yeah, but then what happens if someone changes their mind? You know how politicians are about brand new stadiums. Obviously, if the Wilpons are going to get involved, they build a brand new soccer stadium in the parking lot. Because if there's going to be no soccer stadium in their plans, I'm telling you right now, do you know how many Met fans that don't follow the game are going to protest that a soccer team is playing in their baseball stadium? There are those that don't follow the game, and they would definitely be protesting. I know for a fact. And I'm telling you right now, it would be absolutely terrible if that happened. You know, I'm not opposed to a New York City 2 team. If that happens, fine. I'm not opposed against the Brooklyn Knights. They're in the PDL. I'm not opposed to the Long Island Rough Riders, who are also in the PDL. I wasn't opposed to FC New York, that was supposed to be in the USL League. But you know what? When you can't do – if you can't basically stand up and say, we're going to back off, we're not going away – where just, you know, the whole issue that happened before this D2 USSF league started, you know, I would be fine. I accept it. That's no big deal. It doesn't, you know, I have no hate against them. There's no hate at all. But the way that things are run, you know, what happens to the people that wanted to follow FC New York? And at the same time, there, like I've said before, there are people that are trying to drive a wedge into the supporters group. Now, I'm not going to call the people out. I'm not going to say their names because you know why? I'm not in the mood for this. And I'll tell you why. Because I am not going to be the one that will await them. You shouldn't have done, no. No, let them fall on their own faces. It's fine. But at the same time, who are these people that came out of the blue and started to act all, you know, up in our faces? Now, I'm not going to get involved with those sort of things, but there are certain people that I know that do go to the Red Bull games. They don't wear a Red Bull jersey anymore. They don't wear anything Red Bull anymore. Yet they go to the games and they're not in favor of Red Bull. And they say that, well, I go to the games, but I've just refused to wear their colors. I'm not going to wear their scarf. I'm not going to wear this. Then what's the point of coming? You say it's still your club, yet you refuse to wear their colors. And you've been on the internet, on Big Soccer, and you've been going against them forever and ever and ever out of the blue. I don't know what to say anymore. I really don't. I don't know what makes a person who was for the club then all of a sudden just goes against it. And even though he's still going, and he's still supporting in a certain way, he's really against them. It's like he has an agenda. Why is that? I have no idea. That's why I don't bother to talk to him anymore, or that person anymore, or her anymore. He knows probably I'm talking about him, but I'm not going to say his name. And I refuse to say his. You want to know why? Because I'm just not going to start. Technically, I have. But I'm not going to call him out because I am not that type of a person that will do that within our fan base, within our supporters. All I can say is this. The club is winning. It's a new regime. It's no longer Jeff Agus running the show. Juan Carlos Osorio is no longer here. It is Hans Buck, Eric Soler, Richie Williams, Goran Arnold, Des McAleenan. These are the gentlemen that is running this club. These are the gentlemen that are going to help us with building a fabulous side that is going to be a powerhouse for years to come. And all I can say, the early returns are favorable right now. We are undefeated at Red Bull Arena. Whenever Juventus comes, and that will be on Sunday afternoon, May 23rd at 1 p.m., Juventus will be coming. And then, of course, the New York Football Challenge in end of July, Manchester City, Tottenham Hotspurs, Sporting Lisbon from Portugal. But for the club, there's an opportunity here to do well, a possibility of doing well in the U.S. Open Cup, qualifying matches will be gone. And, of course, we could have a good league season. The idea at the moment is to make the playoffs. And we'll see what happens both in Open Cup qualifying and in league action. Now, the U.S. Open Cup, as we all know, is the FA Cup version from U.S. Soccer. It's going to be during the World Cup. Now, obviously, we don't like to see it during the World Cup, but you know, we have no choice but to follow it through the to go with it during the World Cup. But it's not that bad. Here are the dates for the matches and the situations. First round will be in June. June 15th, all 32 lower division teams in the U.S. Soccer Division II League, USL Second Division, PDL, USASA, and others will meet each other. June 22nd will be the second round, and that will be first round winners facing against each other. In the third round, eight MLS sides, and at the moment, qualifying is still going on. If the Red Bulls defeat New England tomorrow night, they will host the Colorado Rapids on Wednesday night, May 26th, and that match, hopefully, will be their ticket to round three proper. And then that will be on June 29th. Who they'll face against, we don't know. Once again, facing DC United, and that'll be in June. The quarterfinals will be in July on the 6th or the 7th. August 31st or September 1st will be the semifinals. And on Tuesday, October 5th, the U.S. Open Cup final. And once again, the matches will be Real Salt Lake at DC United June 2nd. That'll be a 7:30 p.m. start at RFK. New England Revolution at the New York Red Bulls, May 12th, 8 p.m., Red Bull Arena. You can see that streaming live once again on the New York Red Bulls website. And, of course, the winner will be hosting Colorado. And that match will definitely be on Wednesday night, May 26th, 8 p.m. So that is the U.S. Open Cup situation. And let me talk about the U.S. Open Cup. The U.S. Open Cup to me is a tournament that I absolutely love. I never knew about the FA Cup. All I knew was you had the Premiership in England, you had the Bundesliga in Germany, Serie A in Italy, in Spain, Major League Soccer, and that was it. The first time I ever saw or heard of about the U.S. Open Cup was in an MLS Soccer, a Major League Soccer merchandise catalog in the second year of the league. And I saw DC United huddled around at the time, which was the Thomas R. Dewar Cup. And I said to myself, that's not the MLS Cup. What cup is this? I'm a little confused. I don't know what that is. And I found out that that was the Thomas R. Dewar Cup, and Thomas R. Dewar and the Dewar family makes the Irish whiskey based in Scotland, or in Ireland. One of those, I think it's in Scotland. But it's over in the UK. Thomas R. Dewar came to the United States wanting to, not just to promote his whiskey, but promote the game of football in the country, in the United States, when he was promoting the whiskey. And 1914 was the first official match for the U.S. Open Cup, and they named the cup after Thomas R. Dewar. And from 1914 on, it has been, in my opinion, an important thing that all clubs in Major League Soccer, League, and PDL fight for this cup. The very first club to win it, Brooklyn Field Club of 1914. And, of course, the only two sides to win it more than once, or shall I say more than three times, or more than four times, is Bethlehem Steel, five-time winner of the U.S. Open Cup, in back-to-back championships of 1915 and 16, 1918 and 19, and their fifth championship was in 1926. And you always see the pictures, those the descriptions of what the first soccer-specific stadium was. Just a grandstand. A simple, small grandstand in Bethlehem, Pennsylvania, which is now seats for a high school football team. But in my mind, that still is historic for U.S. soccer. And hopefully one day that can be still considered for soccer and not just for high school American football. The other team that has won it five times is Maccabi SC. They're based in Los Angeles. Based in Los Angeles, and of course, Maccabi, it's Jewish. Jewish American soccer players playing in the Lamar Hunt U.S. Open Cup. And for Maccabi LA, they have won it in 1975, 1977, 1981. And of course, 1978. Those are the only two clubs that have won the U.S. Open Cup five times. Three-time winners, or if you want to go to four-time winners, in the Major League Soccer area, Chicago Fire. And, of course, those years were 1998, that's when they won the double, 2000, 2003, and the last one in 2006. The last club to win the U.S. Open Cup in back-to-back seasons, of course, the New York Pan-Cyprian Freedoms. And if that name sounds a little familiar, they were once in the PDL as the New York Freedoms. They've won the Open Cup three times in 1982, and the last time, which was back-to-back, 1982 and 1983. In Major League Soccer, DC United has won it twice. Los Angeles Galaxy have won it twice. And, of course, the 1999 Rochester Rhinos, when they were in the A-League before it was USL First Division, defeated the Colorado Rapids 2-0 at Columbus Crew Stadium. There's plenty of history here, ladies and gentlemen, and there's a lot of clubs that have won this from New York, from Pennsylvania, a lot of clubs. Metropolitan Soccer League, which is a very famous soccer league here in the New York City area, amateur side, of course. There's the Brooklyn Italians in 1991, and they won the Open Cup back then. And of course, there was a side called the Brooklyn Dodgers Soccer Club a long time ago. This is, of course, after the baseball team left Brooklyn and went to play in Los Angeles. Brook Hatton. And for those of you that are not familiar with that, Brook Hatton is basically a side. Half the players are from Brooklyn, and the other players are from Manhattan. New York National FC, Hakoa All-Star, which is also from New York City. The New York Ukrainians in 1965. New York Hungaria in 1962. A lot of clubs. The AAC Eagles, of course, in Illinois. They won the Open Cup once. Greek American AC, which is based in New York City. And I'm just telling you, ladies and gentlemen, the U.S. Open Cup, it's a fabulous tournament. Look, if people in England care about the FA Cup, then we should care about the U.S. Open Cup. And hopefully, care about the U.S. Open Cup. And I understand that they're trying to find ways to make it better. Well, there's many ways to do it. One time, maybe one day, we will have a U.S. Open Cup show. That is the idea for right now, to have a U.S. Open Cup show. But anyway, recap show for the Open Cup qualifier between the Red Bulls and the Revolution will be on Thursday night, May 13th. I'll have audio from Hans Bakker, from the players that will be playing the match, from the Red Bulls. Hank Alexander, New England Revolution supporter, will be on the show, and he will be giving me the Revolution side of the news. Once again, Saturday night, May 15th, 7:30 p.m. Eastern, MSG Network, New York Red Bulls will be hosting the Seattle Sounders. We're going to bring this back up. Ladies and gentlemen, as we all know, former Red Bull player Joe Vide is battling Hodgkin's disease. Please go to this website once again, www.thefriendsofjoevide.org. Once again, thefriendsofjoevide.org. Donate. Please make a donation. Please make a donation to help him out. He was a very good player, very thankful that Joe played for New York. A very nice guy. I've met him like once or twice. Just absolutely a very nice guy. Please help him out as he's going through a tough time right now with Hodgkin's disease. Once again, let me thank all of you that have been listening to the show. You've downloaded it through RSS feeds, iTunes. You come to blogtalkradio.com and you clicked on or you searched for Feuerstein's Fire. I'm over 1,000 listeners, and I really want to thank you guys once again. You know, without you supporting this show, I wouldn't be doing it. I hope I've brought you good guests. I want to thank my guests, Stephen Leonard, Portland Timbers supporters. Eddie Rock of Libero Sports Agency, Carter Kirschneier from the North American Soccer League, Brian Lewis of the New York Post. Ladies and gentlemen, have a good day, and please enjoy your football. My name is Daniel Feuerstein. Have a good day, ladies and gentlemen.